And I said last week, the Browns had a chance to do the funniest thing, which was after the Deshaun injury, after the fans in the locker room clearly having their issues, Shelby Harris on We're the Harris's saying that that Browns fans lost the locker room and they lost players. They had a chance to do the funniest thing possible, which is go out there at home and beat Baltimore. And then lo and behold, they went out there and did the funniest thing possible, which is go out at home and beat Baltimore. So we got a lot to get into today. I don't know. Nick Wilson, Afternoon Drive. Hi, how are you? Happy Browns Monday. It's a Browns victory Monday. We got Macaroni Baloney, Mac Robinson on the board. We got Meredith Kane behind the glass. And then we got JP on the 2020s. He'll join me as co-host coming up in 2 hours' time. But if you listen just faintly in the distance, you can hear the reverberations of the door slamming on Deshaun Watson's time in Cleveland. Because the whole point of this week was we're going to find out how much of it was about Deshaun Watson and where he was in his career. And listen, there were signs, right? Once you get past September, there's only so much you can explain away about bad performance. And listen, I still think it's a little too easy to put everything on why the Browns are now 2-6, even with this win in Baltimore, which looked as much fun as we could possibly have dreamed it up going into it on Friday's show. We kind of thought, well, I don't know if it's going to end in a different result, but it's going to look better. It's going to look more fun. And that is exactly how it happened. But I don't know it's as simple as every single thing going for the Cleveland Browns and going against them was Deshaun Watson's fault. But I think you saw a team with a renewed spirit, a renewed energy, and you just can't deny the difference in the circumstances. And while it might be more than just, well, you swapped out Deshaun for Jameis, I'll be honest with you guys, how I watched that game on Sunday, I watched it with a different energy than I've watched any of the previous games that I've seen with Deshaun Watson. And this is where it's not really about Deshaun Watson. It's about the trade. It's about the contract. It's about the embarrassment at whiffing so incredibly hard at this trade. And for the Browns organization to bring this pox upon us and having to deal with it and having to deal with the, whether it's the moral ambiguity of it, having to deal with the questions we asked ourselves. Are we still Browns fans? And then them not having the common decency to make the trade work out. All those things put together, and all of a sudden, you have this unbearable pressure. And so I watched yesterday with no pressure. A little bit of it's just because they're 1-6 and I had no expectations for them. And the other part of it is I didn't have to have expectations. The playoffs, as of right now, yes, even right now, are far-fetched. Oh, not even just the playoffs, but we're talking about the future of guys. We've had people start talking about names like Shedeur Sanders and the kid from Medina, from Penn State, and all the different kids we're seeing. Carson Beck from Georgia. All the kids we're seeing in college. Because of the albatross that is Deshaun Watson's contract, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to go out there and get a veteran. And if you do, it's probably going to be a discounted veteran. You didn't have to have that yesterday. Yesterday was just bringing it back to football. And that doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that, it doesn't really mean anything about Deshaun. It doesn't. It means something more about the Cleveland Browns. I thought it was interesting because I just think as you've had enough evidence, yes, the Browns won games with Deshaun. At least last year, they won games with Deshaun, even when Deshaun was hurt. But I think if you look at the offensive production, which is yardage put out there, which is, you know, sustainable drives, it's night and day. And what's so perfect about this is, and I've said this a couple times, Jameis is like discount Flacco. Like, they are the same kind of quarterback. They're big, mostly pocket-based quarterbacks with a little bit of giddy-up to get out of situations if you need to, but they're not going to run around for their life, and they're just going to try and throw the ball down the field at every opportunity they got. And guys, there were quite a few interceptable balls yesterday, but it doesn't matter because they weren't intercepted, right? Chiefs fans, and this, I'm not making this literal comparison, but I'm simply saying Chiefs fans do not care about any of the almost interceptions with Pat Mahomes as long as they win, and as long as more often than not they're not interceptable, they're not intercepted. Doesn't matter if they're interceptable if they're not intercepted. Yesterday was also proof that the Browns lied about who gave them the best chance to win for seven straight weeks. And again, that's less of an indictment, or sorry, it's less of an endorsement on Jameis and more of an indictment on where Deshaun was physically and mentally. And what's funny about that is you knew that. And I still saw people, especially in Cleveland media, oh, it just proves they lied. Yes, we knew they were lying when they did it. You can't, like, post hoc, and I'm saying that because we had a caller last week use the phrase post hoc, and I'm now addicted to it. But you can't, after the, when you knew the whole time that they were lying, that Deshaun gave you the best chance to win. And then, at the very end of the rainbow, the lie was proven to be the biggest lie in the world. You can't then get, like, retroactively mad at them when you were pissed the whole time. It was obvious that Deshaun didn't give you a chance to win. That was probably obvious, honestly, it was obvious in a certain game, but, like, specifically Washington, where you just got run off the field by a rookie quarterback. So I don't care that they lied, because the reasons why they lied, they knew they were lying too. They had no choice but to put Deshaun out there on the field, and Deshaun's injury, it sound, freed them. It freed them from their obligation to the financial responsibility that had tethered this thing to the damn ground. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's incredibly dangerous to go ahead and start applying a lot of meaning to one win. Because until proven otherwise, that's what yesterday was. One win. But don't let that stop you from savoring every minute. You beat Baltimore. That in and of itself is a erotic experience anytime you get to go ahead and beat Baltimore. How you beat them, which is you were trailing at the half and you kind of came alive, and then your defense really did a number on Lamar. And I know, like, Lamar had a chance to win that game with being able to throw into the end zone at the end of the game. Outside of the Jaden Daniels thing, those plays, like, work 1% of the time. So even that, yes, Baltimore had a credible threat of winning that game. The Browns were going to win that game. And it's so weird that a team is 1-6, that late in that game, I had no doubt that they were going to win that game. So yesterday was proof that they lied about who gave them the best chance to win. It was the door slamming on Deshaun Watson's time in Cleveland. If it already wasn't sealed shut, it's certainly now completely sealed shut. And yesterday was also proof that this roster isn't that far off, right? Cedric Tillman and Jerry Jeudy. Turns out they don't suck as much as you thought. Hell, even Elijah Moore got in on the action. David Njoku looked the most alive David Njoku's looked from the last six or seven regular season games of last season. DeJuan Jones looks like a left tackle who can play through the whistle. I was told that that didn't exist. I was told that if they had a better option on the roster, they would have gone to it. Well, people have been shouting about DeJuan Jones as left tackle as far back as January. All of a sudden, that sure feels vindicated. Oh, the defense looked pretty good despite losing JOK in a very scary situation. And again, hope I think it seems like he's okay, but hopefully he's more than okay. Despite losing Denzel Ward to his sixth concussion, which is a whole nother scary conversation. And listen, yesterday also might not be proof that this team is ready for a playoff run. Excuse me. Those words sound sane. But, like, Jameis was playing for the first time. There's now tape on him, right? In this context, against a good defense, they were without their best corners by a wide margin. One of their best safeties wasn't playing in Marcus Williams for some reason that we don't know, some sort of issue behind the scenes, and the Browns sure exploited that. But yesterday doesn't have to be about anything more than good God, that was fun. Good God, there was no pressure yesterday. And it also can just be about a great tribute to somebody that we lost as Clevelanders in Jimmy Donovan. And it's so funny, man. I've heard a lot of people talk about Jim as the professional, which is totally makes sense because he is synonymous with Browns football. And I'm sure that is such an honor to be synonymous. I mean, the Browns going after the game and taking the game ball to his widow and his daughter, that was really great stuff. And again, proof that the Browns organization can get the little stuff right and can prove that this is an honor to represent Browns football instead of what sometimes else it feels like whenever you get anybody new in town. But the first people I thought of were his widow, were his daughter. And here's the other thing. Like, I don't seek out mentor relationships in this business. And that's not anything against anybody. It's just who I am. I kind of think this business can be a little insidious and ego-based. So I pretty much do my show, and then I go home to Wadsworth and try and soak up as much time with my family as possible. So my relationship with Jim was not the relationship it was with other people, because I never really sought it out. But every time I saw Jim and Berea and said hi, there was a great big smile and a wave, and how are you doing? How's your family doing? Everybody asks how you're doing. Nobody asks how your family's doing. And the other thing is, Jim was the voice of the Cleveland Browns to me. And when I lived in Dayton, and I was not happy that I was living in Dayton because I was in middle school and I missed my friends in Wadsworth because we had just moved, and I missed my family, those drives to and from Dayton on Sundays, Jim and Doug Deacon made it made sense when the Browns weren't good. When the Browns were, honestly, they got way more Brownsian later in the time there, but where it felt like every moment we had hope, there was something missing. And Jim did something that a lot of broadcasters don't do. He was honest about it. And he was honest about it in a way that was respectful to the team, respectful to the coaching staff, while also letting you know what was really going on. So he was really good at his job. And he was really good at speaking for Browns fans, who really at points in this last 25, 26-year debacle have felt voiceless. And so just to sum up the big picture, like, I don't know it's possible to sum up somebody who you knew from one lane when he was more than just the voice of the Cleveland Browns. But yesterday's win, it was hard not to feel like that was for Jim. And the universe does not give you a lot of moments like that. So to have that happen for Browns fans, for his family, for his Browns family, I just think that's why you keep coming back for sports. That's the thing. Amidst all the disappointment, all the bickering, all the arguing, moments like that, the loss of somebody that everybody here truly treasured into a team winning a game no one really thought they were going to win, and a win that would have meant something to him. Man, that's why you sports, right? That's what keeps, that is the addictive drug that keeps us coming back in spite of our good senses. 216-474-0092. Nathan Zagura, his old broadcasting partner, he was on the call yesterday. A lot of really great emotions and stories from him. We're going to talk with Nathan at 3 today. I do want to know what would have happened if they had lost that game, because Nathan was full of emotion. I want to know if he would have risked it. If they had lost that in traditional Browns fashion, would he have thrown it all away just to mother bleep this team? I'm kidding. Sort of. Nathan at 3. We've got Daryl at 6. JP's going to join us here. But I am curious, how much did yesterday change things for the Browns? Because I think there is a danger in looking for too much change. The Browns did the change. They swapped out the quarterback. Wasn't their choice, but they finally swapped out the quarterback. They did have a choice on who was going to be their signal caller. All right, so they swapped that out. They finally swapped out the left tackle, which some of us have been begging for a little bit, and we will get into at some point whether someone got Wally pipped yesterday, and we're going to do it as respectfully as we possibly can for a guy that, quite frankly, much like other people, did not endear himself all that much. But I will continue to go back to this. Let yesterday be what I think it was, which was potentially the first building block of Browns football being fun again. Like, so much of the previous 7 games was you didn't trust them. Whether that was you didn't trust Kevin, whether that was you didn't trust Andrew, whether it just all boiled down to you didn't like or trust Deshaun Watson. Am I certain that yesterday leads to a playoff run? No, I'm not even close to there. Do I know definitively that it should change the Browns' course of action coming up at the deadline? No, and I think saying anything to the contrary would probably be pretty overreactionary and just in the moment emotion, which I understand, but probably shouldn't dictate where the Browns are. But yesterday was about Browns football getting back to being fun, getting back to being, I didn't listen, it'll never be carefree because we all care too damn much, but it was about getting back to being who you've been when this team wins under Stefanski and Barry. That's how the offense is supposed to look. That's how the defense is supposed to look. That's how they're supposed to play at home. So the next barriers or the next things to overcome are, can you do it twice? Because this team hasn't been consistent. The next things are, okay, can you do it on the road? Because that was a bugaboo last year. All right, the next thing is, can Jameis play this into an extended run? And I think that's actually the biggest question. I think free from the pressure of Deshaun, I think the energy is going to look a little bit more consistent from week to week, guys. I just think that's kind of common sense, right? I do think when it comes to the road, I think that's going to be hit or miss regardless because you are trying to get out of a hole. I think Jameis is the biggest piece. And I tend to think when a guy's got 100-plus games in the NFL that you're going to live and die by the way he plays. And a couple teams have lived and died by the way Jameis has played. But for at least one game, it was pressure-free, it was fun, and it was double deuces to a Ravens team that you just can't hit with birds enough, right? There's left and right, and then maybe a couple extra hands of left and right, of free birds from Cleveland Browns fans to those dirty birds out in Baltimore. 216-474-0092, and Nick Wilson says social media reactions on X. Powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. How much did yesterday change things for you when it comes to the Browns? We'll get into that. And the idea of watchability in the Cleveland Browns on 92.3 The Fan.